You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
What is good, everybody? We are back.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
You recognize that voice.
Man, you just brought me back, man. You just brought me back to Miami right there with that accent. I love hearing Poppy.
There it is. And the voice that you're hearing is not... we got a replacement Cuban. It is not Alexis Guerreros. I am joined. You've seen him on, obviously, on MLS Extra Time. You see him on Apple TV. MLS Season Pass. Shout out to Stefano Fusato, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Awesome to be here, man.
Thanks so much for coming through, man. I seriously really appreciate it. We just recently met in person, but you're someone I've known for years. I think we followed each other for a long time while you were... I think I started really seeing you around when you were covering soccer at ESPN.
Yeah.
And now, boom. You're in everybody's homes now in Espanol on MLS Season Pass. How's that been so far?
Bro, it's fun, man. It's cool to be... just focused on one sport now, rather than when I was at ESPN, I did like 9 different sports for them, and sometimes I didn't got confused whether I was talking about college football, NFL, MLB. I was like, you know, what the hell's going on? But it's fun. It's fun to be able to talk about our league here domestically. It's been awesome to do it in both languages and do a little bit of commentary, do a little bit of hosting. And yeah, man, it's fun. We got Messi in our league now, even though he's not really been around too much. But it's been fun. It's been a good time.
He's you know what? I heard that he spent $4,000 for tickets to watch Inter Miami. Right? Okay, he's fine with the prices going up a little bit.
It's all good. No comment. They pay my bills, bro.
No, you gotta do what you gotta do. I mean, you know, it costs to see Messi sometimes. What are you gonna
do? It's pretty wild.
All right, but we have a lot to discuss today. Obviously, we are gonna talk Major League Soccer. But coincidentally, you happen to be a Liverpool fan, and this is quite serendipitous. It's all worked out.
We all planned it. No, this was us. We planned that this was going to happen.
This was going to happen. Yeah, you guys knew about it. You guys were in on the fix, too? Damn, dog. Come on, man.
I called Darren England. I was like, Darren, I need you, my guy.
We always, we have a big show today. We're also going to be joined by Fisher Stevens, the director of the new Beckham documentary that is coming out on Netflix this Wednesday, October 4th. An incredible conversation with him and about David Beckham. So this is a very just Miami-heavy episode. Okay.
All right.
I love it.
And you may remember Fisher Stevens. If you don't recognize the name, there's some people that who might be older than 30 listening to the show. But there was a very popular movie called Short Circuit. And Fisher Stevens is the guy, the quote unquote Indian guy in the movie, even though he is not actually Indian. It's a whole other conversation. Yeah. Look up Aziz Ansari on Conan to get the whole story behind that because it's absolutely fascinating. But Fisher Stevens came through. He's also a Liverpool fan, so it's a lot of relevance today.
Yeah. You guys really did pull some strings.
We did. It's all part of the plan.
Let's get right to it. At Tottenham Stadium, they're hosting Liverpool Football Club, and one of the wildest games. We know the final result. It was 2-1.
Yep.
But there was 2-1 to red cards. That was the red cards alone. That wasn't even the scoreline.
Yeah, exactly.
There were 2 red cards issued for Liverpool, and they were playing with 9 men, and it was just. At what point it felt like they were going to hold on, right? But what ended up after this game, what being the actual story, was the decision to overturn I don't even know what words to use. I'm going to say not overturn.
Don't even know, really.
Doesn't even matter what.
The refs don't even know. They still don't know.
Luis Diaz scored a goal. It was a great ball, a great pass, and great goal. on the field, it turned out to, they called it offside. And we were all watching the game, and we're looking at it on screen right now. We're looking at the moment of, of where you would put down the offside lines and move on with your day, right? Right. You could punch out and be like, I did their work, right?
It's all you got to do. Just draw lines.
I did my job. I put down the little lines, okay? And they did not. So I'm watching the game like everyone else, and I see that there's no lines. Yep. Nobody put down any lines, and then they just say, check complete, keep it moving.
Offsides. No
offside.
Goal
doesn't count. And really don't really think about it much more. You just be like, okay, that it is what it is. But that is not what ends up being the story after this match, because essentially what ended up happening was, after the check complete, we learn that the VAR, Darren England, and this is the problem. When you know the VAR's name, that's a bad sign.
That ain't good, man. That ain't good. You never want to know that guy's name.
My man should be in the shadows. You should never hear his name. But Darren England, and then the assistant VAR, Dan Cook. Why do we know your name, dog? That's even worse.
The assistant VAR, bro.
This is like, it's hurting to relive all this.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be mad all over again.
I got to tell the story.
I get it.
So what ends up happening is they check complete. They kick off, and the game keeps going. But because he said check complete, so apparently what happened was that that Darren England thought that it was a goal on the field, which is why he said check complete, confirming the goal. Didn't realize that the linesman and the ref were saying that it was offside. And that's it. He did the check complete, confirming their call on the field, because he thought the call on the field was a goal, which that just brings up a billion other questions of like, bro, are you watching the same game that we're watching?
That's what I'm saying. Because when you watch the game, if you're watching the game, we're all watching the game. If you see Luis Diaz's reaction after the goal, it's, oh, man.
Right.
What do you think it is? You think he's going to be doing this and being all upset?
They don't have
if
that goal.
Call it a goal?
They don't have that goal celebration in FIFA. No, the angry, sad. Yeah, why did I do that? How come the ref, mad at the ref?
Yeah,
that's
man.
Not a happy goal celebration.
Like, so if they're not, if they don't see that, because we all saw it, we're like, oh, it's going to get ruled out, and then we see the replay. Oh no, it's not.
Right.
If he doesn't see the reaction from Luis Diaz, and I'm pretty sure they probably had a shot from the sideline with the flag up.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So if you're not watching that, what you watching, bro? Like, where are you watching?
And I can speak to that. I don't know if you've ever done this, but I went to, Alexis and I, we went to a soccer coaches convention, the one that they do every year, the United Soccer Coaches. And MLS had a VAR booth where you could be the VAR.
Oh, wow.
Right? And you have about four or six screens. This is probably like a minimalized version of what VAR is. So I'm sitting there, and literally I have like Robert Sabiga, like one of the MLS referees, over my shoulder. And I'm like, the pressure's on, bro. But I see every single angle. I mean, just definitely what the TV broadcast does not see. I saw several different angles of different plays. There's it's almost impossible to not look. I did VAR for 8 minutes, and I could have got this call right. That's a bad sign.
That's not good.
So the initial after the game, they put out the response to basically the statement saying like PGMOL just confirmed that it was an error. It was just like an objective
human error.
And then when you realize what the human error is, it's just so remarkable that it's just a, no, that's not what I said. No, you know what I mean?
But that's my question. Like, when that all happened, you can't, and you see that they're like just continuing play and they're not giving the goal, don't you just be like, whoa, hold up, talk to this guy. No, stop. Like, why doesn't that happen then after? So it's not just one human error.
Right.
I mean, just the fact that already it was already 12 versus 9, I guess, you know, in that game. But that's just my fandom coming out. Sorry about that. But it's like, you know, they had so many opportunities to still stop this and get it right.
Right.
And they knew it's a human error. The guy who made the call knows, oh, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
This is messed up. This is not wrong. This is not right. Like, what's going on? And then they don't call down, and it just continues on. It's wild. It's wild that this happens in a Premier League game for this to happen is insane.
And it kind of just highlights, like, the Premier League, they have the most money and the best players and blah, 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 and the most fanfare and the most eyes and everything.
Yeah.
And there's just something. They generally tend to have the worst refereeing. Every week they're
easily seen every week it's gotten. But the thing is, that's too. It's gotten progressively worse since VAR came, and I think that's really everyone's big problem. Like before VAR, we could accept, you know, like a bad call here and there. Oh, he missed the offsides. Oh, he got like a foul wrong or whatever. Yeah. Now, bro, that you have computers telling you exactly what happened.
There's no excuse
anymore.
It's
inexcusable.
Yeah. And that's the big issue, is that now the conversations are happening about, should we get rid of VAR? We don't need it and blah, blah, blah. The game was better beforehand. Maybe it was, but like, I don't know if you ever read Arsene Wenger's autobiography. And he talks about the corruption in refereeing that he left France because of it. He was just like, I can't. I think he went to Japan because he's like, I just want to be
get
around.
Out of here. Yeah.
Somebody, I hope there's just more honesty over there. And look, so I think the people calling for like get rid of VAR, that's not a reality in my opinion, because the game can be so, and we've already lived it, right? In so many decades of just like unbelievable. You know, what is it? Noera Penal whatever.
In Mexico, yep. Noera Penal, yep.
So we've been through it. Now we have a new, like, you know, area to direct our anger at, and it is VAR. It has to be focused on making this better.
Yeah, look, it has to be better. And look, if, you know, on the real, you know, take Liverpool out of this. Like, every team's gonna get screwed at some point. Like, it's just gonna happen with a refereeing decision. So I'm cool with that. But what happened this weekend and having that, allowing that human error, that's just bad on the sport. Peter, that's just bad for the sport from A to Z, from any country you're talking about, any league. This is not what you want to see. You have VAR for a reason, to get these calls right. You can't have an error like that, especially on the biggest stage in front of the world in a massive match that, I mean, look, it could cost Liverpool top four. It could cost, if they're battling for the title,
millions. I mean, you know, millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars for one guy getting a call wrong. So, and the fact
two
that they
guys.
Admit it.
That's
two guys. It's not even one. It's two.
Dan Cook, you're not getting away with this.
Yeah. Dan Cook,
know
still,
you.
Yeah, we know you're wrong too, Dan. We know.
It is it's wild. And you know, you work with Christina Uncle, who I've seen her from time to time, but I got to hang out with her at the EAFC launch, and I think people like her just putting a face and a voice to referees to add some humanity, because we get mad at referees in every sport, and it's nice to just have a person like, okay, this is their perspective,
right.
And so I've grown just a lot of sympathy for referees, but this is one of those things of like, you know, that Darren England and Dan Cook. Did this work? I don't know.
It's gone.
What happened? Why is this not working?
It's bad. Dan Cook. He's in our systems too.
And Dan Cook. They were both taken off of their assignments the next day. I forgot what games they were supposed to call.
Yep.
But they and then we just hear all this stuff, right? All these stories about them, and this is why I mentioned Christina Uncle, because she was sort of talking about the concern people were having that the refereeing crew was assigned to a Saudi charity game
charity
or something
match.
Like that
in the UAE. Yeah.
In the UAE. And so then Christina Uncle had brought up like, okay, are we going to talk about how overworked some of the referees are and the travel, and especially in Major League Soccer, where they have to travel thousands and thousands of miles from match to match. Like, maybe this opens the door to start thinking about the quality of refereeing, how we're treating the referees, things along those lines. But it's... So I'm stuck between the two. I'm like, I have some sympathy of like, maybe they shouldn't be working 48 hours before taking a 15-hour flight or whatever.
But that choice, that's on them. Yeah. That's their decision.
And
to go.
They got paid.
They got paid for
that
match
as
like,
well.
In most situations, I will agree with, and Christina Uncle, I've had these conversations with her in the past. I haven't had a chance to speak with her yet since this happened at Tottenham this weekend. So I would love to get her perspective on it. But this that was their choice to go over there and get paid and get there. That wasn't the over. Yes, referees are overworked, especially here in Major League Soccer. Like you said, I mean, it's a haul for them to get from game to game and things like this. But in this case, with these guys from England and they're in England, I mean, it's like, come on, man. Like you have a, you're scheduled for a match for your main job. It's like me trying to like, oh, I'm gonna go. It's MLS day today, but the day before, even though I got a 14-hour work day, the day before I'm gonna go take a job in Europe somewhere, and then fly back and expect it to be on my game for you know my main MLS gig here.
Damn,
you
know I mean? Like, I didn't know Stefano was the Wolves sideline reporter.
Doesn't yeah, just show up over there. big win this weekend here for the boys.
My man is in Birmingham the night before a big day. It is quite surreal. This situation, but it allows me to comfortably kind of say, you know, or at least two things. Well, one is like MLS referees are better than this. I my experience, even though you get, you know, frustrated at you know, even with Christina Uncle, I've been angry at Ted Uncle sometimes. I'm what the hell? Yeah. You know, every time Ted Uncle was assigned to like NYCFC games in like 2015, 2016, I'm like, oh, bro, what is this? But you know what? Maybe I'm like, okay, maybe he was going through something, right? And
sorry, Christina.
This is a roast of Ted Uncle. Let's go. But then the other thing is just like, bro, how is your name Darren England, bro? Your name is England. Your name is England? Dog.
Maybe that's the problem, bro. You got to get these English referees out of here.
How? What a...
All right, we got to get William American to be the next VAR over there.
My man, Bill America.
Billy America.
Billy USA. Baby.
Okay, teach him how it's done out there. Just such a... I mean, look, it's frustrating... And honestly, it's probably it is frustrating, and it makes it worse that Liverpool lost the game the way that they did.
So tough on Joel Matip, man. Yeah. I feel bad for him. He had such a good game up to that point too.
Playing with nine players, exhausted, just defending. I mean, you could see. I mean, and there were also a couple moments where I thought they were going to score with nine guys. Yeah. That's how.
I'll put the Liverpool cap on and say like they played a hell of a game considering the situation.
Yeah,
and I mean. That's a team that they're showing you that the Liverpool kind of like mentality monsters. How they kind of gained that name over the last few years, not so much last season, but you're seeing it right because they were still fighting, they were still in that game. Couldn't tell too much that it was 11-9 or 12-9 in that game because you know they were just fighting to the end, and it's brutal that it happened that way for Joel Matip to get that own golazo, by the way. But you know what I mean, that's the way it goes. But you know, I feel like for Liverpool themselves, this will be a game that's going to be like, all right, rally it up and kind of just get motivated. Sure. Now they just got to stop getting red cards, man. Yeah, just overall, because they got four on the season already, including those two.
It's so wild. And they won the games the red cards. So it almost seemed like I even made a joke. I was just like, oh, Liverpool victory incoming, or whatever. After the red card, the one to Jota was like, I mean, it was two yellows. It was Curtis Jones.
Curtis Jones was the first one, which is that was an unfortunate one. I want to get your perspective. You think that's a red card? The foul ended up being bad, but in my opinion, he has nowhere to go. The ball, his foot rolls on the ball.
But when my homie Darren England's on VAR, you know what we gotta do, bro. Darren never gets
Darren's
it wrong.
Like, nah,
bro.
Man, that's a red.
Are you trying to doubt my man Darren England and Dan Cook? I could understand maybe Darren England, but and Dan Cook, I can't even fathom the idea of doubting both of those gentlemen.
I don't want to hear those guys' names ever again, bro.
I'm done. No more. No more Darren England talk, please. Right now, we're seeing a lot of reports. I saw this from Miguel Delaney. I think maybe he's with The Athletic. I don't remember where he's from. But this is from Ben Jacobs. Says Liverpool have made a formal request to PGMOL for audio conversations between officials from Luis Diaz's disallowed goal against Spurs. Club believe it's important to hear full transparency and will use it to assess the next steps. And it's also a little bit like, what are they really going to do? I mean, it's just going to be like, yo, this is what happened, bro. We messed up.
But it's good to hear it. It's good to hear how the whole process went down.
That's the main thing. I mean, I understand for Liverpool's sake, They want to hear it. Everybody wants to hear it. Yeah. But this is the thing. This is going to be one of the hottest pieces of media.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In probably like footballing history.
Seriously.
I hope they say something so stupid on there. Just
like, mate, did you see that? Wait, did he call him off? Oh, I thought he called him off. Oh, no, he called him off.
I just want to hear the most incompetent just version of whatever this ends up being. But I feel bad because they're going to be so heavily criticized with the whatever the miscommunication was. And who knows where sort of the root of the miscommunication. Like, did the VAR say something to the center referee that misunderstood? Something's lost in translation. I don't know. Like, did they use some sort of slang to offies? He's offies. I was like, what? No, I don't know what that means. I don't know.
No, we know they didn't say enough because all they say is check complete. Check and they don't say check complete. That's a goal. That's all you had to say. That's a goal.
And then it just brings up all the conspiracy theories.
That's the big thing.
Does check complete mean the check was cashed and went into my bank account? The check has completed the transfer? Like, bro, we don't want. Maybe this is the thing. Maybe this does something for our perception of refereeing, where we like, oh, they're corrupt, they are against the team, they're destroying this league. And it's just like, no, man, what if they're just stupid, right? Well, they're just really dumb.
I think that's what publicizing this audio is going to do. It's going to at least make us be like, oh, yeah, they're just dumb. They're not corrupt. They're
that's
just
the
dumb.
Best case scenario.
Best case scenario for PGMO. Yeah. I was like, oh, our guys are actual idiots.
Yeah. No, the best thing that's going to happen out of this is just going to be where, you know, comedians like you are just going to have a ton of ammo to go at once we hear this audio.
I'm going to use this for the next, like, 5 years.
You just got a bit forever, bro.
Alexis and Christian just 4 Netflix specials on this one moment.
Just on that moment.
Christian Belanco presents Darren England.
At Madison Square Garden.
Okay, I don't get it, but whatever. I'll tune in. Anyway, just such an insane series of events for VAR. And look, VAR never wants to be the story. You know, referees never want to be the story of any game.
Some might. There's some that might.
But this is kind of a crazy one. And this is one of those decisions or mishaps that ends up changing the game. The rules in the game are going to be changed somehow to prevent this from happening again. Yeah. So we shall see what that ends up looking like. All right. Let's get to the interview with Fisher Stevens. I know, Stefano, you haven't seen it, but we crushed it. I love it, dude. I love it. Right.
Also, don't mind Fisher's documentary, but they crushed the interview.
The interview was better than the documentary.
Okay. Beckham's going to be inviting us to Miami home soon after watching this. But no, this is really dope. Again, the documentary comes out on October 4th. We saw the first two episodes of it, and it's spectacular. I highly recommend it, even though, Beckham is, already, like, whatever, most handsome, famous guy or whatever. But it's absolutely really interesting, his life story and everything that he dealt with in England.
My wife's actually going to... This is actually one that she watched with me.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, why? She's like, it's David Beckham. I'm like, oh, that's why. Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense.
Posh is in there, too. A lot.
Oh, there you go.
So it's great. So you know how we're going to watch this documentary, Stefano? And we call him Mike Miguelito.
Miguelito.
Mike was too white on my
face. Yeah, we're too white. Miguelito. Exactly.
It's also Hispanic Heritage Month, all right?
Exactly.
Go by your given name. But we're obviously going to tune in, drinking an ice cold Coors Light. That's the move, all right? It always is. It always has been. And this is the best thing, Stefano. The best thing about an ice cold Coors Light is that you know when it's cold enough to drink because the mountain turns, they turn blue right on the can or bottle.
Doesn't matter what it is, right? It's always blue. Like, mountains are always blue. You gotta love it, man.
It's you can watch David Beckham. You can watch him get a red card for England while you...
Spoiler alert.
I mean, you know. Yeah.
1998. You know, everyone back in 1998, spoiler alert.
It was a wild time back then. As always, Coors Light is the one we choose when we need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligan. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Let's go. All right, here it is. Here's our conversations with director of the documentary series, Beckham, Fisher Stevens.
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.
I mean, illustrious guest doesn't even begin to explain. This gentleman, I mean, storied. I mean, this guy directed the documentary we're about to talk about.
Very much so, yeah. It's always nice to find, you know, when people in Hollywood are involved in footy, you know, Americans, exactly. It's always nice when, you know, we speak to comedians, we speak to, you know, just people involved in the entertainment industry, but this man is directly connected with, I think we share this in common because we have all met David Beckham,
right?
Which is just an honor, but
we didn't get to meet him like this guy got to meet him.
We didn't get the access that he did. But
we asked for it and they said absolutely not.
October 4th, the Beckham doc will air on Netflix. It's a 4-episode miniseries about Beckham and his family and his history.
This guy knows Beckham almost as good as Victoria. That's the most important
part. I wouldn't say that.
I said almost. Ladies and gentlemen, the voice you're hearing, the one and only Fisher Stevens, everybody.
Fisher, what's good, man?
How's life? Well, how do you guys know? When did you guys meet Beckham?
We met him at the 25th anniversary of the Major League Soccer. They held a big event at this hotel in New York. It was the first year of Inter Miami. This is we met him a month before the pandemic began. It was a different time,
yes.
Fisher, and we met him and Jorge Mas.
I asked him to adopt me.
Yes.
I said, "You got a kid named Brooklyn. I'll be the Bronx Beckham."
We tried to get in. With this family,
we trying to be a part of the Beckhams.
So we were Fisher Stevens before Fisher Stevens.
Okay.
I think.
Okay, they didn't take me in either. Even after all that, so I'm not. You know, it didn't work for me either. But
let's talk about the project because this is amazing, right? And I'm, you know, we're both very familiar with David Beckham. We obviously followed him as a footballer for a long time, but. You know, I think even as comedians, like one of my favorite things that David Beckham has ever been a part of is the Ali G interview that he did.
Yes.
Like he just had amazing moments of.
He gets it.
He's famous, but he has a humility. But this doc focuses on him and his life and his fame. So my first question to you is simply. What drove you to do this particular project? And I'm also very certain. I'm sure there's plenty of people that have pitched. Beckham, David Beckham, to like, yo, we want to make a documentary about you. Why did he agree with you in particular? And that's not a slight to you or him or anything.
What caused that merge?
Yeah, well, how did it happen?
Well, really, it happened because of Leonardo DiCaprio.
What a flex.
Okay.
What a flex. What a flex. Immediately, first question. Oh, you know how we met him? Because of Mahatma Gandhi. That's what you just did.
No, listen, I did not pitch this to David. So apparently I was in a cab on my way to work on my other job, my acting job, and I get a call from Leo's office saying that David had met Leo and David's been looking for a director for his documentary and struggling. And Leo suggested you, can we give David's office your number? And Leo said that I was the guy and David had seen Before the Flood. And he'd just seen this other film I did called Palmer with Justin Timberlake that I directed. And I wasn't really that interested, to be honest, in doing it. Although, I mean, I didn't know anything about Beckham. I started following Premier League in 2003, the year that he went to Madrid. Okay. And I just knew about, like, he was this Galactico when I, you know. And then I knew that he was, like, this brand Beckham and in Miami. And I didn't, like, know much about the Spice Girls, didn't really listen to the Spice Girls, just thought they were this branded thing. And I figured he wanted me to do it so I would just kiss his ass and do a branded Beckham content film. And I, you know, but I, of course, my people I was working with were British, and they're like, you got to meet him. The guy's a legend. He's one of the greatest footballers England ever had, and he had an incredible life. And I started doing due diligence, and then I said, okay, I met with him, and he was very different. It was during the pandemic, so it was on Zoom, and he was so different than I expected. And I said, why me, man? Like, why me? And he says, I just feel like, you know, you're the person. He just had an instinct, and I think now – looking back, I think it's because I didn't have any baggage. You know, I wasn't British.
Yeah.
I mean, with all that, you know, oh, growing up with all the stuff that the tabloids wrote about him and believing all that stuff. And I really was on a road to discovery. And I think he wanted someone to be on a road to discovery with him. And that's, and then I met him twice, and I met Victoria, who was hilarious at the dinner. And I was like, she could be funny. This could be great. And I took the job, but it was, it wasn't like I pursued him. He pursued me more. But
okay.
even more of a flex, bro. Double.
Leo's hit me up. Beckham's hit me up.
I was wondering, because you're a Liverpool fan. I was like, man, this got to be there. Like, I'm an Arsenal fan. I would never do a documentary on Harry Kane. It certainly wouldn't turn out good. It wouldn't be positive.
it would be a hit piece.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It would just be a collage of misses, you know? But I guess since you missed that era, it really doesn't stand out. But I guess the question I have is, you mentioned, you know, a British person told you he's a legend in England. And you touch on this in the film. There's a period of time where that wasn't necessarily the case. England didn't really think of him yet as a legend. And he was thought of as a little negative right around that 98 time. What do you think you gained sort of an understanding of him and his victorious period during that time?
Well, yeah, I honestly, I didn't know about the, you know, as you'll see in the film, he got horrible death threats, and when he got thrown out of the World Cup, he got red carded, which a lot of people knew. I really didn't follow that stuff before. And then he proceeded to have, some would say, and maybe he would say, one of the greatest seasons of his career. He certainly had the best season of anybody in English football. He was a runner up for the Ballon d'Or, which is the best football player in the world. He finished second. His team won the treble, Manchester United, that season, which made him even more hated anywhere outside of Manchester in England. Like, they hated him double down, because not only had he been thrown out of the World Cup in 98, 99, his team wins the treble, which had never been done before. And then the hate was just out of control in England. So to persevere through all that takes an incredibly strong person. And that was kind of like my journey with David, is like, who is this guy? How does this kid from East End of London, humble beginnings, turn into this global superstar, even through all the ups and downs, like a roller coaster? And I think we hopefully made a series that you do feel like you're going up and down, like on a ride for, you know, 280 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing I noticed between the first two episodes. The first episode does feel like the ascent, and then the second episode is definitely that decline. But you use the word perseverance, and I think that is, from what I've already seen, that is the first word that comes to mind when you are watching David Beckham and Victoria Beckham and the Spice Girls, just their lives are pretty. I mean, one of the things I really enjoyed was, like, it really feels like these are two people that you would want to hang out with, and they seem way more accessible and normal for how famous they actually were. Was that one? Did that take you by surprise, of just the humility?
Completely. I mean, obviously, I spent a lot more time with David, but I did get to spend time with Victoria. But yes, they are like, I mean, David is like just a, you know, he's just like a dude who wants to hang out, have a good dinner, have a good time. You'd never know, except when he gets up from the table, that he was, you know, famous, because he still gets pretty mobbed wherever he goes. Yeah, that was one of the shockers for me. And I think, look, when you make documentaries as a filmmaker, the job you have when you're making a film about a subject is to try to capture the essence of that subject. Who is that person really? And I'm hoping that that's what we did. And we, you know, David certainly gave us a lot of time. And It took 2 years. I interviewed him over 10 different times for over 3 hours each. So it was a long, it was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of time together. Not to mention, you know, some Verite stuff in Miami, which is the hat I'm wearing, which is
very much so.
Messi's first game.
There you go. He's killing it right now. I guess through watching this, for those of us who've met him, all three of us, right? We're all good friends with David. Yeah. We call him David as well.
Sometimes I throw in a David. You know, to mix it up.
Remind him of having Real Madrid.
He is a quarter Jewish, by the way.
There you go.
Okay. Amazing.
All right, shalom, my guy. I guess for those of us who've met him, and obviously you had some access that 99.999% of the world will never get. Is there something specific about him that completely shocked you about how normal he is? Or you mentioned he's just a dude. What's something that humanized him to you almost the moment you met him?
Well, he, the first interview we did in his so-called man cave, we rearranged the furniture to do the interview. And we left a bit of, you know, little things. He meticulously started rearranging the room back to the way it was. And even turning the bottles in the liquor cabinet so that they faced the correct way. And I had heard about his OCD, but I didn't really kind of, I hadn't witnessed it at that point. And then you saw the second episode, the opening. He has this compulsion of things being straight and neat and everything tidy, which my girlfriend wife wished that I was like more like David.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting, and I think he had, the other thing that was a real journey for me making the film was how much David wanted to be loved, yet how much he was his own self. He wouldn't bend his will or his self if to be liked, but he really wanted to be liked. But if it meant conforming, and that is what we really get into with his relationship with Sir Alex Ferguson and with his father, because it is kind of also a father and son story. But he really is he remembers names like I mean much better than I do. When he meets people, and he listens like, you know, like I don't listen very well. I listen when I'm on stage or doing a movie as an actor, but in real life, like, you know, but David listens and pays attention. He's really in the moment, in a really interesting way, which kind of also is part of what makes him special and different.
Yeah. When we met him, that was one of the things. It was just like, why are you looking at us in the eyes, David Beckham? Yeah, like, why are you so focused on every word we're saying? We're nobodies. So it's remarkable.
I don't think he thinks that. That's what's so remarkable about him, is that he has an incredible appreciation for people, and he loves people, which is, you have to. When you see episode 3, when he goes to Asia with Real Madrid, I mean, you just never see anything like it.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned a father-son story, and I think after people are done watching this documentary series, that relationship is going to be a bigger part, because more people's just awareness, because I did not know this at all. I didn't know about his relationship with his father, and just the, you know, there's a, and I don't want to sound too critical, but it's just like, obviously, a kind of an overbearing father in sure, pushing him to be great. And then, you know, a kind of common story, a mom being like, you know, be a little easy on him and stuff like that. But those conversations with his parents, what did you walk away from those conversations feeling and learning?
Well, listen, the mom and dad definitely had different ideas about what is strict, what is it to be hard on someone. But I have to say, like, as David says in the film, I don't think he would have gotten through the red card and the murder threats and the kidnapping threats without that discipline that his dad and Sir Alex Ferguson taught him. That is just clear that those two put into his head that this fierce determination. Now, also, David had the strength to do it. Not everybody has the strength to just soldier on. And I think in the end, you know, there's definitely things that maybe there's a, it's weird. His mother's extremely warm and his father's extremely tough. David has his mother's warmth, even through all the toughness of his dad. What you guys felt when you met him, what I feel is there's an incredible warmth to this guy that, and that's from the mom. She's wonderful. I got, you know, I interviewed her 3 times. I got to know her. You kind of need to get to know the parents when you do a story on someone.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
They gave me access. And I think the dad, you know, as he says, he comes off like he wouldn't have done it any other way.
Yeah, it's interesting because there was one moment, I think, where you had asked the question to his dad about, like, kind of being so tough on him. And he kind of just chalked it up to, like, well, I was right, right?
You're welcome.
and there's a little, it's just one of those things of, like, if I was watching this documentary 30 years ago, I would have been like, hey, all right, yeah, this is how we create, you know, generational athletes with this kind of, like, pressure. Pressure makes diamonds. But then maybe my 2023 brain is like, oh, maybe he should have been a little nicer to David Beckham.
Can you tell Christian just had a baby 5 months ago?
Yeah. Good. I could feel the soft father in you. Now, you're not going to turn into Agassi's dad either.
Right. Like, no. I don't think that's happening.
The difference with Agassi is, like, Agassi turned to, you know, he crashed, right? But the beauty of Agassi is he came back. But, yeah, you know, he really crashed, right? He got into drugs, if you read his book, you know, terrible marriage. And then he found himself, which is great. But David never – the other crazy thing about David is he never really crashed.
You know, been floating.
He wore a sarong once, Fisher. What do you mean? Rock bottom. I mean,
no, the guy was a superstar. My wife knows nothing about football, knows who David Beckham is. And that's a testament to his popularity. But I do have to ask, before we got on, you said there was a couple clubs you would not have done this for. Is there one in particular where you're like, oh, it's just one step too far for you?
Well, it's complicated because I loathe Man City.
okay, so that makes sense.
I loathe Man City, but I think they're phenomenal. And I think Pep Guardiola is just a master, genius. And their players are great. I just don't like the way that they just seem to spend uncontrollably and get no penalty. You know, they say they're going to get slapped, but they get their wrist slapped. And they,
Right.
So, I mean... I really don't like Man City, and for whatever reason, I used to love Chelsea. I was a massive Didier Drogba fan, but I just can't seem to find. And my producer John Batsik, he loves Chelsea. I mean, he bleeds blue. He loves the team, and I don't know. I get such joy when they lose and when Man City loses.
No, I get it.
I'm an Arsenal fan. I love whenever London team loses.
I'm in an Everton group chat that it's all a bunch of comedians that live in Liverpool, but they're all Everton fans. And so I get to understand sort of the culture of what it's like to be an Everton fan. And I would have to say, I sense more joy in that group chat when Liverpool lose rather than when Everton win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a shame because I like Everton, but listen, this is the truth to be told. One of my best, oldest friends took over Liverpool years ago and is the president. And once
LeBron James? I'm kidding.
Mike Gordon. And once he went to Liverpool, I loved Arsenal. I loved Chelsea. I'm a fair weather American who got to football and is, you know, I didn't get into it till I did a movie about the Pele and Beckenbauer coming to America, this movie called Once in a Lifetime. And once I made that, I made it with the same producer, Batsik, and he took me to see a Chelsea game at Stamford Bridge. And I fell in love with football and I fell in love with Drogba and I started supporting Chelsea briefly and then met an Arsenal family and fell in love with Arsenal. And then, but Mike once Mike took over Liverpool, that was it. I'm all in. I'll never change.
It's okay. Well, you did a great job with that film too, because that was absolutely incredible. I want to ask you one last question. When one time I was hanging out with Thierry Henry, a little bit of a flex of my own. Mm. Thank you very much. And there was, I was like, oh, what a regular human being. And then there's a moment where you're like, oh no, this is a superstar.
Right.
There was the way someone reacted to seeing him on the street was as if a ghost came out of me. It was just like, what? Like, eyes wide. Was there a moment that you had that realization? Because I know you're getting a personal conversation with him and his family. But is there a moment you realize, like, oh, this is the David Beckham?
Well, I'll tell you, but more to your point about Thierry Henry and David Beckham being superstar athletes, right? So for me, it was more like, I even though David is so down to earth and you're hanging out, but you realize, and you guys haven't seen the last episode. So we film him on the pitch with his son, and you realize he's 48 years old and he's still like superhuman in terms of his athletic abilities. And it's like, oh my God. I mean, we're not like, yeah, we can be having dinner, but he is a different species than me, right?
Because yeah, of
his athleticism is so incredible. And then I'm like, holy shit, this guy's a sports, you know, these people are like from a different planet than us show folk, you know? And that's when I get more like, oh my God, he is, you know, like he's disciplined. This guy still works out 6 days a week, right? And he still kicks the freaking football. He still kicks it. And that's for me, like Thierry Henry is like, oh my God, he's my wife's hero, favorite player of all time. Of all time. His picture's on our fridge, actually.
That's so dope.
Yeah.
Were you just like at dinner with David Beckham looking at the dinner rolls? Like, I bet you could kick this into that lady's wine glass right now.
You know, and then on top, and then on top of all that, he's also insanely handsome, bro.
It's just not fair
at all.
Fucking annoying. That fucking annoys me. That pisses me off. I can't, just staring at
his jawline.
No, that's upsetting. That's
well, too much, God.
So yeah, I mean, life isn't fair, but what is fair is that you'll get the opportunity to watch the Beckham documentary on Netflix October 4th. Go check it out. It's truly, truly incredible. I mean, we've seen kind of similar sort of series or similar docs around, you know, Class of 92, mm-hmm. right? We've seen similar things, but this is definitely the most in-depth, most personal story about
you
David
get to
Beckham.
Really know David Beckham
and his family. Yeah, highly, highly recommend it.
Well,
so
I just want to say I had to be careful because I didn't want to make it a sports doc, right? Because David's life is much more than sport. It's culture, it's family. So I had to balance the line between sports and entertainment and just emotional. I wanted to make it emotional, and I wanted to make it for people that love football and people that don't like football at all. So I would screen it. I have a couple of really nerdy friends, male friends and women friends, who just don't know anything about football, don't even know the rules. And I would screen it for them and get feedback just to make sure that I didn't have too much football. So that was a tightrope I was walking with my team the whole time.
Yeah, I was watching with my wife, who, you know, pays attention to the game fairly casually. But more than anything, I knew this was just a hit when she was just when she asked me questions about things that we're both watching. You know what I mean? So she'll be like, did that really happen? I'm like, we're both watching. Yes, yeah. It's real. Like, that's how
you're
wild.
You're watching at the same time I am.
So that's how wild this man's life is, where she's just like, there's no way that happened. I didn't know that happened. I'm like, yeah, look. I mean, this is actually happening. The last question I have is just maybe a look more toward the future. But Inter Miami and this project for Beckham, I mean, you know, I remember going to David Beckham's games when he got to MLS, playing for LA Galaxy. But now that he is an owner and Lionel Messi is in Major League Soccer playing for Inter Miami, we've already been kind of flabbergasted at some of the skill that we've been seeing. But Messi's impact on not only the league, but on Beckham himself. I mean, did he? Have you had any conversations about what Inter Miami looks like and what Messi is doing for his own life and the club?
Well, unfortunately, we were locked, and then Messi went over, and I just had to open up one section quickly to get the first game. But David, I can tell you, since I've been filming with him for a few years, that all of a sudden he's at every game.
Yeah, he's not gonna miss anything.
And he loves going, and he loves those. And by the way, all of the team is playing. Yedlin's playing much better. They're all playing so much better. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw that the three stars, the three Spaniards or two Spaniards and one, Busquets, Alba, and Messi missed the last game. They still drew, which was pretty good for them. They played a good team. So I think it's really transformed. Yeah, David's excited. He's jacked up. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. And he loves those guys. I can tell you personally, he absolutely adores those three guys who came over.
Nice. I mean,
you got to do the Messi doc. Messi in Miami doc next.
They're making it.
Okay. You know what? Then you can make the Cooligans doc. We'll let you have it.
You know what? We'll go to Miami. We'll go to Miami. Beckham will fall in love with us.
The Cooligans. You'll be there.
Be quite entertaining.
Tell me all about your love lives, your ups and downs, and your
absolutely.
Yeah, it's all ups. Yeah, definitely. Two stand-up comics that ended up in soccer. Yeah. All ups.
And let's see how good you are at investigative documentary. If you could find my dad, that would be awesome.
Let's get on it. Okay.
Fisher, this has been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for joining us again. October 4th on Netflix. Go check out the Beckham documentary. Fisher did an incredible job on this. So, but thank you so much for joining us. You're welcome back anytime. We heard that you're in the area in New York, so you're welcome to come by the studio anytime if you ever want to do the show. So seriously, go check out the doc. All right. Cheers, man.
Bye. Good luck with your baby.
Thank you. Shout out to Fisher Stevens, the homie, coming through. He lives in Brooklyn too, so he might come through the studio.
We'll get him in the studio. We got to have a pre-production meeting for the Cooligans doc that he's directing right after this.
That's right. We pitched a Cooligans documentary, and you know, I mean,
no brainer. Come on, Fisher.
It'll be mostly me just bottle feeding my baby. It's good content. People like that stuff nowadays. Yeah, you know, it could be like a nice. We could do reality show style,
Alexis driving up to CBS at 3 a.m. is like, I'm so tired, bro. I'm just so tired.
You know,
as someone that's been there a couple times now, him walking into that studio at 5 a.m. like, bro,
I'm tired, bro.
Bro, you need without
good content.
Without a cafecito, you can't get your day started. Yeah. So shout out to Fisher Stevens. We spoke a lot about Miami and Inter Miami with him, but let's get to Inter Miami, obviously the main story and main highlight. I know it's when you guys are in your pre-production meetings, how difficult is it to not only talk about Messi? You have to push now for like other topics, right?
Yeah, we do. I mean, look, it's been obvious. It's massive for the league. So yeah, obviously we're talking a lot of Messi, and we do a lot of our pregame shows before Inter Miami games have now turned into hour-long pregame shows rather than half an hour or 15 minutes, because we have both of those as well. We have to try to find the biggest challenge is trying to find different ways to talk about him.
Sure.
Right? And try to move the story forward, not just always keep going back to the same thing. I mean, it's just it's a crazy thing to talk about. It's still insane to think about that he's playing in Major League Soccer. Like,
it's been a thing that, I don't know how to properly. I need time to reflect on it, right? Like, living in it feels like what?
Weird, yeah. Like we're in the Twilight Zone or something. Yeah.
But yeah, it has been quite the story. But we didn't get to see him play this weekend against New York City FC, and this was an interesting thing because I was one of the hosts at Terminal 5 for NYCFC, and it was a great time. It was a party, essentially. I mean, they had the reggaetonero de la ghetto, who I'm a huge fan of. Nice. He performed beforehand.
It looked like a good party over there, man.
It was great, and it was funny because the obviously there was a lot of NYCFC fans, just a lot of soccer fans. There was one person in a Messi jersey. I'm like, bro, what are you doing?
Get out of here.
Get out of here. This ain't the move.
Where is the bouncer, bro?
But it was interesting. There was obviously a lot of NYCFC jerseys and the whole thing. But then there were also you know, people dressed like they were going to see De La Ghetto. You know what I mean? Like, it was a reggaeton concert. They're like, it. Oh, what's all this? What are these soccer balls?
Hey, man. It's NYCFC, baby. They do it right. I love it.
Let's go. So no, the crowd was incredible. I had a great time. It was funny because last year Alexis and I both hosted it. And it was the same game at Terminal 5 against Miami. It was all same thing, whole party. NYCFC winning this game. And then Inter Miami tie in the second half. And then there's a giveaway. Why am I forgetting his name? Who was the guy that Miami signed from Toronto? The DP? Pozuelo.
Alejandro Pozuelo. Yeah.
Okay. And terrible giveaway. And he like basically tapped it. So I'm at this. Essentially, a nightclub, partying, enjoying soccer. We're winning the game, and then Pozuelo comes in and destroys it. And then it was like right at the end. It was like a minute left in the game, and we just had to be like, "All right, everybody, okay, take care, right. Have a good night." Yeah. When I was wanted a party. We were supposed to have an after party. Yeah,
what a buzzkill, man!
So when Santi Rodriguez scores the goal, bro, the place lit up. We're winning. Couple minutes left. We got this. Inter Miami. You know, we saw the Kremaski and Arroyo. Bro, that was. I'll play the clip in a second. But that was also wild. But Inter Miami end up drawing this game. But this was a game which was just so important for both teams. I mean, Inter Miami desperately need the 3 points more than NYCFC did. But all these teams in the Eastern Conference are fighting for these last two, Nashville just clinched.
Right.
Two playoff spots. Yep. And a lot of people have an opportunity. So when it comes to Messi missing the game, but also Inter Miami dropping these points, what's the likelihood of two things? That they make it, and then that we also see Messi play again this season?
I think all the teams around, it's almost like none of them really want to get in the playoffs. They're all trying to throw it away. So that, I guess, gives them that little hope. They don't control their own destiny anymore.
Yeah.
After that draw against NYC, Chicago does somehow. Chicago Fire
beat the Rebels. Rebel Arena was a huge win.
That's a huge win, and they, you know, they kind of now have a drive if they can win their games, and they have a decent little schedule here because they're going to take on an Inter Miami team this week, midweek, with likely without Lionel Messi. Again, this is a disclaimer. I work for Major League Soccer. I do not know whether Messi is playing or not. I do not know this because my Twitter gets.
Let's call up Darren England. He knows.
He knows. Darren England knows somehow. No, he definitely doesn't know that. He definitely don't know. He doesn't know that. He doesn't know a lot of all the things.
He's like, but check complete. That's all he says. Check complete.
Who's Messi? I've never heard of this guy before.
But yeah, I don't know whether he's going to play. But all signs point to him not playing and not being on the bench and not being available. Maybe through the international break is what I've heard. Specifically me, but I don't know. Just throw that out there one more time. But look, man, do they still have a shot? Yes, because I think that they still have a talented roster, albeit a young roster of the players that are left. The Kramaski at 18 years old. Robert Taylor is a young player. Facundo Farias, a young player. Aviles, a young player. So it's a team that still has talent. They look like they're spent. They look like they got no more energy.
They've really played
a lot of games.
That's one of my kind of main points. I think we're kind of being a little kind of flippant about, you know, we talk about Busquets and Alba and Messi, but these other guys have also, they've been going 90 minutes. Yeah, they've been playing these games fully and winning League's Cup. And then playing the U.S. Open Cup, these MLS matches, there's the comments from Steve Cherundolo after losing Campeones Cup. He's kind of, again, put it on blast. He's made the criticism before about that, like the MLS roster rules don't allow for teams to play these many fixtures. And sometimes people are like, look, it's Steve complaining. But it's like, at some point, it's like, it doesn't matter. You are essentially penalized for winning so much because you're in more competitions and there's no way to like kind of manage it. We've heard that in Europe as well with the Champions League clubs. But it seems like maybe is it the roster size? Is the exact issue?
Yeah, it's the roster size. It's not the same amount as European clubs. European clubs can carry like 40 something players on the roster. And MLS can I think that I think MLS is going to look at that in the offseason. I think they're going to have to. Because look, at the end of the day, they want Messi playing, right? They want Messi playing as many games as possible. And look, he is and it's not just him, but I'm using him because he's the biggest example. He's 36 years old, man. Like, yeah, look, I'm 37. Things hurt. And I'm not a pro athlete. Right? I'm not a professional soccer player. And a lot of things hurt. You know, so I can't even imagine the guy who's doing that.
Yeah.
You know, at his level and got over 1,000 games behind him. And this would be maybe an issue looking at it is because after that Ecuador game with Argentina where he gets subbed off, my dad, Argentine dad, calling me like, what happened? I saw him come off freaking out. He comes off. That's already like, okay, that's a concern. And when he spoke in the media after, he says, this is going to happen a lot more where I'm going to have to come out of games. He's never, ever said anything like that.
Right.
Ever. He never wants to come out. For him to admit, like, this might have to happen more often where I come out of games, that's already like, okay, red flag number one. Like, he's feeling it. So it's going to they're going to have to put him on some kind of a program where he's still playing as much as possible. But if they don't expand those rosters next season and they come into the season with this many players, it's going to catch up to him and to all the other guys too, because like I said, it's a lot of games these guys are playing. They're in champions and CONCACAF Champions Cup.
Yeah,
next year.
I think because it's Messi and because you know, obviously we just want to see him play, but we just almost don't even think. There's like two things: we don't think he's like human, right? Because he also doesn't really get hurt that much
in
his career.
In his career, he hasn't. No.
It hasn't really been a thing that's like nagged him. But then he also walks so much. You're like, how are you getting hurt? You're just walking out there. You don't do nothing, bro. And then it's like, oh, yeah. But then the magic comes out.
And I think that the him walking all that is what's kept him at this level for so long.
Yeah.
I'm going to take breaks for a little while in the game. I'm just going to chill, read it.
Quiet.
Get my opportunity. I'll put a banger in the top corner. That's what I do.
It's disappointing. I mean, look, I'm comfortable with if he gets shut down for the season. Because then we get to see him next year, and he'll probably play the entire season and stuff like that. So a nice break will do him justice.
He'll get a proper off season where he really hasn't had one. If you think about it, he hasn't had a proper off season. Mm-hmm. This is with the World Cup in the middle too, where he won that, and then the season continuing on, then continue straight into MLS, Leagues Cup, all that. It's been a rough
stretch. Was like he got off the yacht from his vacation to the induction like ceremony thing the introduction. But these are the last four remaining matches for in MLS for Inter Miami. They have the Chicago Fire at Soldier Field with, I think we've already confirmed or we've heard that Messi's not playing in that one. And I know the Fire are furious. Sold so many tickets for that. Then it's FC Cincinnati and Charlotte twice. And it's a rubber match or whatever that called?
Home and home.
You lose to Cincinnati, it is what it is, right? You understand that.
And you got also, Cincinnati's already clinched the supporters' shield, so you wonder, you know, how many of their players will be fully involved in that as they get ready for the playoffs. Which, by the way, if this is kind of crazy, but if Inter Miami does make the playoffs, if Messi is healthy and Cincinnati then gets you just win the supporter shield. Here's Messi. Here you go. Here's your first round appointed.
The game against the Fire, if Miami win that game, then that I think that throws everything into all right, we might see him again. He might play because there's a real opportunity. The Charlotte is the team ahead of them in the table. Mm-hmm. So are the Fire. So, you know, looking at some of the other results, a couple of teams lose. DC United, DC. I mean, look, I'm hoping.
It's like you look at those teams, Christian. You trust DC United? You trust the Fire? Do you trust the Red Bulls? That's what I'm saying. That's why you can't say Montreal's another team that you don't trust, especially away from home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why you still can't like completely close the door. It's a lot more difficult now after the result against NYC, but. It's not over yet. This game this weekend, if they lose this game, it's over. This game is a big one for them.
There's 12 points available for them. Realistically, they could make it with 9.
Yeah.
It's not impossible.
Because they also got the games in hand on everybody.
Yeah.
At least one game in hand on everybody. except Charlotte, but they play Charlotte twice.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting, bro. If they beat Charlotte twice, like how mad? I've already seen a lot of Charlotte FC supporters really frustrated with their team, and like obviously just poor results, giving away games late and stuff like that. This is what kind of keeps it interesting. But this game against the Fire is going to be huge. Like, are the Fire going to kind of spoil the show for everybody? Because a lot of neutrals are just like, yeah, it'd be nice to see Messi,
of course,
in the playoffs. So we'll see if they can bring it. Given that you are from Miami, I want to make sure I give you the opportunity, because. Jimmy Butler, obviously this is a show about soccer, but
yeah,
Jimmy,
it's all right. We love hoops.
Yeah. there's a couple of things. You are from Miami, and Jimmy Butler has made the news, bro, because his media days. Yeah. Now he's done this multiple times. So we're looking at a photo of Jimmy Butler with the finest bangs you've ever seen. This is emo Jimmy Butler. People are calling him. What do they call him? I saw Mike Golick Jr. called him Backboard Confessional, which is really funny.
That's great. I didn't see that. That's a good one.
That's great.
That's a bunch of really good ones. But this is wild. I mean, he's a character. It's great. But one of my favorite things about Jimmy Butler is that he can be like goofy like this and silly. But my man, you can't guard him on the court. No. It's just like he can do any dumb thing he wants. And it's like, all right, fine, make fun of me. I'm a dunk on you.
I mean, it was the best thing ever, right? He comes out, he says he's emo. It's been a rough week for South Florida and fans. And a lot of things we talked about with the Heat, not getting Dame Lillard, and then missing out on Jrue Holiday too. So it's been a rough time, and you've got to feel for Jimmy, because now he realizes, oh, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be me against the world. But he loves it, and he comes in all emotional. He does the bit, and it's hilarious. He got his piercing done, which is wild. It's commitment to the troll. Commitment to the troll. Yeah, I respect that.
Dude.
But what I loved about it is he ends it by saying, see you in the finals. And it's just like, you got to love
that's Jimmy. Jimmy. That's Jimmy that's in a nutshell, bro.
The swag, bro. So you love to see it.
Swag isn't what I would call that. those bangs in the emo. But yeah, it works for him. It works because he's Jimmy.
We all went to school with this kid.
Yes, 100%.
Right? I mean, it's interesting because I went to high school. And I like rock music, and I listen to a lot of bands of like fans dressed like this to listen to certain bands or whatever. And I just like the music. I was like, I ain't do all that. Do I got to do the whole costume?
Next week on Thursday, Christian tries bringing a wig.
Yes.
The JNCO jeans and everything. I'm like, bro, this is too much.
What soccer player would you picture doing coming question. Out with one of these?
Bro, so I mean, I think the easy one is, and I just met him on Thursday, but Breck Shea. Breck Shea this guy, all right?
Oh my God. That's perfect.
And it's the blonde one. The blonde.
So it's like even better.
Looking like good Charlotte, bro.
Yeah, bro. I love it.
Breck Shea, that's a perfect fit. That's his look, bro.
Okay. He's already
Jimmy
got it.
Stole Nailed that it. Look from Breck, I think. So the other thing also, what a small world and great connection, but you also were an intern at Lebatard Show.
Yeah, I was.
When was that? How long ago was
that?
It
was a long time ago. I was only there for a little bit. Shout out Mike Ryan, one of my buddies from high school. We're still pretty close. But anyway, we were there. It was different times, right? It was an afternoon drive show Lebatard was at the time. I think you always saw the talent they had in that room, and that it was going to be bigger, but it was... If you listen to the Lebatard Show, you know that it can go off the rails at times.
Yeah, dude.
Well, think about that, but just on local radio, and it was just as mad. But look, again, I was only there for a short time. It was always super fun. Those guys do an amazing job. It's a top quality team. So, and they're always rooting for them as well. So,
what a great little connection.
Meadowlark family.
Yeah. I wasn't introduced to Lebatard until the ESPN. I would watch on ESPN News. I just would keep it on all the time and just like learning about the sort of cast of characters. So it's like kind of wild to sort of grow up with Levitard and then be on the show and then have Levitard call me a gas bag.
Yeah. Dan, I love you, bro, but that was messed up, man.
Got him.
I love you, but that was messed up, Dan.
There it is. You're the gas bag. Yeah. Showed you, bro.
Got him.
Wow. All right. So, dude, this has been great so far. So, Stefano, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course,
let people know where they can find you and watch you, and obviously you're doing your great work.
Yeah, man, I'm on all the social media platforms. S_Fasaro, and yeah, Apple TV, MLS Season Pass, English, Spanish, a little bit of both, a little bit of commentary as well here and there, and then now doing some work on the side for CBS Golazo on Morning Footy and Box to Box. Every once in a while. So, yeah, man.
Awesome, bro. Yeah, I can, at night it's a little tougher, but in the morning I have Morning Footy on, feeding the baby, watching Stefano. We need more Cubans covering soccer. You love to see it.
I got the crazy mix because it's Cuban Argentine. I got like a little bit of both. It's a crazy mix we got.
Sure. I got Dominican and Dominicano, bro. Yeah. So I've disappointed my family.
Where's the baseball show? They're like, hey, what pelota?
Yeah, dude, they're baffled. They're confused. But no, man. I mean, I took I went to a CONCACAF Champions League game in Dominican Republic to see Cibao FC, which is the club where my family's from, to play against Chivas.
Nice.
And I brought my aunt and uncle, and just great. Bringing the Dominican family to a soccer game. They call it balompié out there, bro.
Wow.
It's a whole different sport, I think. But no, it's great to see. But Stefano, thank you so much for joining me. As always, everybody, make sure you follow @SoccerCooligans on all social channels. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And join the Patreon, patreon.com/SoccerCooligans, for some exclusive contenido. Again, shout out to Stefano. Thank you so much for joining me.
Shout out Fisher Stevens. Thank you for joining me.
Fisher Stevens coming through. Watch the Beckham documentary and be on the lookout for the Cooligans documentary directed by Fisher Stevens, which we have forced him to direct it. So we'll be back on Thursday. Alexis will be back from his Miami cruise. He was on a cruise with his family. he'll be back on Thursday. But as always, shout out to everybody. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
See you on Thursday. Peace.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.